Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster here at Mile High Sports. Coming to you Friday, February 14th, the day of love. It's Valentine's Day, and we've got no hockey games today. So, unfortunately, we're going to have to find other ways to spend our Friday. But I did want to wait for today to podcast rather than yesterday because we have a big game coming on Saturday after a couple of games to discuss from both Wednesday and Thursday involving every Avalanche representative in the Four Nations face-off. Well, of course, every representative in the Four Nations face-off because all four teams have now played one game. So I did want to go over that a little bit. Wanted to chat a little bit about the preview for Saturday's, what I'm going to call a slobber knocker between Canada and USA, and then just kind of see if there's anything else to touch on. You know, right now it is a little bit quiet on the NHL front in terms of news and rumors and stuff. It's been a little bit quiet at ColoradoHockeyNow.com, just writing what we can and getting through this first week. But things will ramp up starting Monday in terms of GMs having conversations. Well, they already are, but in terms of GMs having stronger conversations and also in terms of seeing some movement around the NHL, I think it's going to get a little bit stronger as we get through this. As far as I know, NHL teams around the league are on break until the 18th, I believe. So I believe Wednesday, February 19th will be the first day that there will be practice again. For the Avalanche, not confirmed just yet, but I do know they are on break until Tuesday, February 18. So given the fact that Thursday the 20th would be the final of the Four Nations face-off, if we end up in a scenario, which, I mean, it is possible, where Sweden and the U.S. are playing in the Four Nations face-off final on Thursday the 20th, the Avalanche might have everybody available on the 19th. Even if that includes some guys playing and then flying to Denver just in time for practice, you know, whether they take the ice or not, the McKinnons, the McCars, obviously Lekkonen and Taves as well. Still feels weird to not have Mikko part of that group. But if we end up in a situation where Monday, February 17, Canada plays Finland, Sweden plays the US, and Sweden and the US both end up in the final, which is very much possible, like I said. Basically, Sweden beating Finland on Saturday and USA beating Canada on Saturday would set up a scenario where Sweden and the US both still have an opportunity because all that needs to happen is Finland beats Canada on Monday to knock them out with Finland because Finland's already would already be knocked out if they were to lose to Sweden after losing to the US. So, moral of the story. If at the end of the day, Monday, February 17, we find out that Canada and Finland have both been eliminated, the Avalanche will probably have everybody for practice on Thursday. If one of those two teams, more likely than not, it would be Canada rather than Finland, end up in the final, then the Avalanche might just have a practice on Thursday with only some of those guys, with some of those guys missing, you know, specifically Makar, Taves, and McKinnon. And then they would have practice Friday. Fly out right into Nashville for a game Saturday at 4 p.m., a game Sunday in St. Louis at 4 p.m., and then they got a little bit of time off before their next one after that. I believe they would have Monday and Tuesday off before they play Wednesday against the Devils to start a very long homestand where there's going to be a lot happening between the trade deadline, a three-day break in there, possibly a season-altering and season-defining homestand, which would go all the way to Monday, March 10. So between the start of the second part of the season until March 10, the Avalanche are going to play 8 games, 6 of them at home in a row, no back-to-backs at home, and they'll have a 3-day off break in between. It's going to be a pretty important stretch of hockey. And of course, in the middle of all of that, they host the San Jose Sharks on Thursday, March 7. They host the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday, March 8. That day right in between, that's the trade deadline. So a lot going to be happening there. Anyways, Let's get into the Four Nations face-off. Let's get into what has been a couple of days of really fun, entertaining, best-on-best hockey. And this is something that I think I mentioned on a past episode. I don't remember which one. But I always had confidence that this tournament was going to deliver, and it has so far. I always had confidence that this tournament was going to mean something to the players. I just didn't have confidence that the NHL was going to do a good job of marketing it. We've seen this in the past with some of the Winter Classics. Obviously not this year, the game sucked. But we've seen it in the past with some of the Winter Classics where the game is exceptional. It is very entertaining. The product is entertaining. The ceremonies and just the way that it's delivered is entertaining. But there's no hype leading up to it. And I think the NHL kind of got stuck in that situation this time around. I don't think it'll be as hard for a World Cup. And obviously the Olympics isn't really their event, but that's always pretty hyped up. But they got stuck in a situation this time around where you're playing a tournament called the Four Nations Face-Off that has no past, has no history, and no future. So it was, what does this really mean? And does it really matter? But then you think, and you remember, if you guys remember before the PHWA, not the PHWA, the professional, the women's professional hockey, the PWHL, not the PHWA, the PWHL, when they came into existence, before they did, Team Canada and Team USA for the women used to go on these tours where they would play games in different cities and do a best out of seven series and all this. And it was just for fun, honestly. It was just to market the game for the woman and to kind of get their name out there, play in different arenas around North America, and just build a little bit of momentum leading into what everybody was hoping for, which was the start of this new league. Those were tournaments without a past, without a history, without a future. They were just one and dones for fun, and they always delivered. Because in the end, these are competitive athletes. This is not an all-star game. This is best-on-best competition, wearing your country's jersey and your country's flag. And it just becomes something that means a little bit more than anything else. And of course, it's best-on-best hockey. So this is the kind of tournament where your Travis Konechny's and your Anthony Cirelli's and players that are valuable $6, $7, $8, $9 million players in the NHL are not playing 10 or 11 minutes, and they're considered, oh, that guy's on the ice in a scoring? No. We want McDavid. We want McKinnon. Like, it really is excellent hockey. Because the fourth-line grinders out there that are grinding away on the forecheck are usually first line players in the NHL. So the product is just that much better. This is exactly what we experienced here. Team Canada and Team Sweden came out. Pre-game ceremony, wonderful. I loved everything about that because it kind of built and generated that hype that we've all been waiting for. Seeing Teemu Selänne and Daniel Alfredsson and Mike Richter, and then of course the legendary Mario Lemieux, because unlike Wayne Gretzky, Lemieux doesn't make many public appearances, especially since he sold ownership of the Pittsburgh Penguins and they were bought by Fenway Sports Group. You don't really see Mario Lemieux often. So when you do, he's just a larger-than-life, legendary type of person. And it kind of, it makes me feel like this is what we're going to have from Sidney Crosby when his career eventually retires. Crosby's a very private guy. You don't really know anything about him, his personal life. He's not one to make these kinds of appearances. And it just seems like whenever he retires, it's going to be a similar situation where you're not quite seeing Sidney Crosby all the time. That when you do, you're going to get chance for his name like you did at Bell Center. The Habs fans love Sidney Crosby. They love everything about what he's done for Canada at the national level, just like they love Mario Lemieux for being one of those legends. So that was wonderful. I loved the chance for Mario. I loved the chance for Crosby when he was named the player of the game, when he came out in overtime. Like, people knew we're going to get something special from him, and we of course did. But I do want to go into a little bit of the things from the little bit of the, like, my favorite observations from that game, which I did write a 10 observations for Canada and Sweden, just because of how much Makar, Taves, and McKinnon were all over that game sheet. And I will do one for USA and Canada on Saturday because that's going to be a massive game. So I do genuinely believe that best-on-best international hockey is the best way to market the game of hockey. It's the best way to market the NHL. It's the best way to build fans. And I cannot wait, As you guys know, the World Cup was officially announced and confirmed starting in 2028, something that the NHL wants to do every 4 years opposite the Olympics. And that one's going to be probably 8 countries. It's probably going to have games both in Europe and in North America, and that's going to involve a lot more marketing in terms of getting the games out there. I do love that Sweden and Finland, they play at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. That's prime time in Europe. So they did that on purpose because they want Europeans to tune into that game because it helps build and market the product overseas as well, the NHL product, given the fact that these are all NHL players. So starting from the top, I got about 8 observations to go through. If you had any doubt that the players, if you had any doubt on if the players were bought in, look no further than the opening sequence. Nathan MacKinnon goes barreling into the offensive zone on the forecheck, finishes the body on Jonas Brodin, eventually eats a high stick, draws a penalty, then quickly scores on that legendary power play where the puck, I believe, went Makar to McDavid to Crosby, backhand no-look pass to MacKinnon, open net, goal. 14 seconds, that's all it took on the power play. 56 seconds into the game, the place went absolutely bonkers. I don't remember the last time I watched MacKinnon smile like that. Getting a spectacular feed from Sidney Crosby on the PP will do that. Everything about that star-studded man advantage was a thing of beauty, but more importantly, it proved that MacKinnon and Crosby have real chemistry. All the reps they've had with each other during the summers have meant something, and we're all wondering and we're all thinking the same exact thing. I wonder if this tournament makes Crosby change his tune about leaving Pittsburgh. You could see the drive and hunger in his eyes on every shift. He's got it. The chemistry with MacKinnon in Colorado would be a wonderful way to end his career. Sidney Crosby owes it to himself to play for another championship. This guy should not be toiling away on a team as bad as Pittsburgh has been. I don't know if it happens this year, but God, like he's got to leave Pittsburgh. It's unfortunate, and I hate that because I'm a believer that legends should end in one franchise and play their entire careers on one franchise. But at least Alex Ovechkin is getting this like second wind of Washington Capitals where he's playing with great players. The Penguins completely fumbled the last 5-6 years of building a roster. It's just been terrible mistake after terrible mistake, and they're unavoidable, and it's going to take a while to clean out that mess. I don't think they are an offseason away from being a contender at all. Jordan Binnington, hate to say it, guys, he deserves a little bit of praise for that overtime. He let in 2 shaky goals but made it up with 2 exceptional stops during the overtime period. I do wonder if he plays against Team USA on Saturday or if John Cooper gives Aiden Hill a shot. John Cooper just spoke to media here on Friday, and he did tell media that he's not going to announce his goaltending decision because he wants to talk to the goalies first. I wonder where he goes with this. Like, it feels like it's a 4-game tournament maximum, 3 games minimum. It's not the kind of tournament where you want to feel out your goaltending, but at the same time, like, Jordan Binnington versus the U.S. would kind of be tough to watch, but Aiden Hill isn't that much better. It's still a very interesting situation in the Canadian crease. Cale Makar led Team Canada with 28.06 of ice time. Second place was Devon Taves at 25.53. They were far and away the ice time leaders. They ran the blue line. Cooper had them out to start every period. They were on the PK. They both got multiple shifts in overtime. Of course, Shea Theodore got injured. He played less than 7 minutes of ice time. Alex Petrangelo's already out. That was supposed to be your top four. The guys in Denver and the guys in Vegas. Makar, Taves, Petrangelo, Theodore. Those guys are both out. So now Morrissey and Parayko are going to go into that game against the U.S. as your second pair instead of your third pair. And two guys that were probably going to be sitting in Doughty and Sanheim are now your third pair. Tough go. Cale Makar was also sick for practice on Friday, and Cooper said he's confident Makar will play Saturday. But if Makar was to miss that game, which I don't think he wants to, nor do I think he will, Thomas Hartley has been called up as an extra who can jump in if needed. Yes, I know a lot of people are thinking, Harley, are you kidding me? Yes, Harley, because guys like Uyghur, guys like Tanev, guys like Montour are probably all out of the country. It's not as easy to get somebody in as a last-minute call-up. Thomas Harley's probably in town and was a lot easier to do that. Big kudos to Filip Gustafsson, the goalie for Sweden, who out of the last out of the first two games, I think played the best. Connor Hellebuck looked okay, but wasn't really tested. Let in a weak goal early to Jukka Harju. Mikko Rantanen did not have a shot on goal. Those top guys for Sweden all didn't really produce much of anything. Barkov, 5 shots. Lekkonen, 4 shots. Resta, Finland, dud. So Gustafsson's been the best goalie so far. And he looked pretty great making that save on Devon Taves, who could have won the game in the third period, and salvaged a point for Sweden and held Canada to just 2 points. Nathan MacKinnon in overtime was an absolute bull. He wanted that winner so badly. He had 5 of Canada's 8 shots during the 3-on-3 period, finished with a game-leading 6. He also took a team-leading 24 faceoffs. He was the one centering Crosby, not the other way around. I love seeing MacKinnon being handed the reins and the responsibility like this. Going to the game-winning goal, this is where we're going to end it. I'm going to read this out because it was an absolute masterclass of a play by Sidney Crosby. The game-winning goal was a great shot and should serve as a reminder to Mitch Marner that he needs to shoot more. The best part of the play, however, Crosby drawing both defensemen deep into the Sweden end on a harmless play at the end of his shift before snapping it back for Marner and getting onside just in time. Marner had separation because the defenders were pushed back and used it to his advantage. Great play, great pass, great shot, legendary stuff all around. Sidney Crosby, high IQ. Like, that's the kind of stuff I'd love to see MacKinnon do more of. Because MacKinnon barrels into the offensive zone over and over again. He'll do a 1-on-3. He'll take a 1-on-4. He'll take a 1-on-2. And a lot of times he'll score on them. But when you don't have any play, rather than just push it back into your defensive zone and, you know, reset, make something out of it. And Sidney Crosby just went deeper and deeper into the offensive zone. And given the fact that his name is Sidney Crosby, he has the respect of the defenders for them to push back. They pushed back. He sends the puck backwards to a Mitch Marner who came rushing into the zone just as Sid got onside. Like, everything about it was masterclass, high IQ. Now Marner has all the room in the world to fire a shot through the defenseman, through the goalie, into the back of the net. I loved that he scored past the 6-minute mark of OT. I love the fact that now the question is going to be around extending overtime. MacKinnon did say he's not a fan of 10 minutes because he was gassed. And, you know, of course he would say that because he's a guy that would be rushed out there every other shift for Colorado, just like he was for Team Canada if OTs went to 10 minutes. But 7 or 8 minutes could be a nice middle ground to eliminate as much as possible the opportunity for shootouts. So that's all we've got here. I'm so excited for Canada versus USA. There's not much else going around the NHL. I did say I was going to talk about a few things, but looking back, you got guys like Vladimir Tarasenko being rumored, Jake Evans. Nothing quite yet that's going to really, you know, tickle your fancy as an Avalanche fan. So I'm excited to see where the next couple weeks goes because we are now 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. Expect the next version of my trade board to be out next week. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot to speculate leading into the trade deadline on March 7th. So if you made it this far in the podcast, bless that pretty little heart of yours. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.